Okay, so I'm talking about HTML5 patents to be won, still to be won, because HTML5 is right now big. There's a lot of excitement about HTML5. A lot of people side with HTML5 to be innovative and to show what it is. And a lot of confusion about what it really is. So HTML5 itself is embraced by all the big companies at the moment because it's a change in how we build websites, a change how we approach the web. And sadly enough, the change in the approach is not mentioned often. So I'm going to do that today. So Apple released the HTML5 on Web Standards website. Google released this wonderful book called 20thingsilearned.com, which explains from HTTP to newest technologies what it means to use a browser, what it means to interact with a browser, what browsers can't do, what they should be doing, and so on and so forth. And it's a beautiful display as well of what HTML5 can do as an application, because this thing is written in HTML5 as well. And it's much like an ebook, just it works on across all the browsers. Microsoft just released a video of that announcing that Windows 8 will use HTML5 as well, which was pretty interesting, and I like the idea of writing something and then building a native Windows app from it. Facebook actually announced Project Spartan, or actually TechCrunch announced it for them, and which allegedly is that they would shift lots of their Flash gaming to HTML5, which... that's all the information we have about it. But it's pretty cool that all these companies start embracing HTML5 and saying what it is, and actually a lot of excitement happening. And a lot of presentations and keynotes are actually talking to us. They don't say like, oh, this HTML5 is like a jolly good thing and you should be thinking about it. But it's more like, HTML5 is awesome. And when you ask them how awesome it is, then they say it's like as awesome as a wizard with a monkey helper riding a squid in space and fighting robot sharks. And that's a lot of awesome. And this is how awesome HTML5 is for a lot of people. I think also it's a misnomer. The problem with HTML5 is that the term HTML5 was already preloaded with being structure of an HTML document. HTML was never sexy, it was just necessary. We put different tags around different things in text to tell a user agent or a human to what these things are. These are not five lines with line breaks in them, these are all paragraphs. This is what HTML was and still is. So HTML5 cannot break further out of that. So that's why I think by naming it HTML and giving a 5 and then removing the 5 again to confuse people, we actually made it a bit limited. Because this is what HTML4 actually was. It's like, this is what you have to do to put it in a browser and actually render it, that it does something. We had this doc type up there, which was never loaded by any browser or done anything with it. We had to put a language in there, which a lot of people forgot, but when you're a screen reader user, for example, getting an English document read out in German is not fun. Much like you have to listen to me now. We then defined a char set, which meant that all these funny characters that those strange countries outside of America are using are displayed the right way. And with a syntax that was like, what the hell is going on there? Yeah, copy and paste it, don't worry about it. We then had link rel style sheets, script types with type of text JavaScript. The only other type was text JScript for Internet Explorer 5 and 6, which was a bad idea. And then we had H1 paragraph, and then a paragraph with the class of footer to say that this is actually the end of the document. And this is all we had. We had HTML, and we can build things with it. And what we built with it was massively overloaded pages with blue things that link to other pages. And that's basically what we've done for years and years and years. Which, when it came out, was a real revolution. Like, oh my god, I can contact another document worldwide without having to redial another telephone number and so on and so forth. We then made it a bit more pretty. We put some like videos in there using Flash or Silverlight using Flash, and all kinds of other things. And we also had forms. And forms are always fascinating because these were the things that made the pages interactive. So users can type in things and send them off. Does anybody know what that is? This is the website you have to fill in to get a visa to travel to America. So this is the first impression I get of American IT if I'm from outside the country. And this is the form that you have to fill in. Look at the size of these buttons. This is just beautiful. Every time I see this, I know I will have a job in 5 years' time, because if the government pays money for that kind of website, I can always write one. Not a problem at all. Forms are quite fun as well. This is a website that actually that I go to if I say I don't want emails from you anymore. So I have to fill in my data and click each of those that I don't want to hear anymore from. So that's what we had. We interacted with forms and HTML and links, and that was about it. And in HTML5, we got rid of a lot of craft. So this is the doc type we have. We still have the language in there. The character set is now one, a simple thing. And so on and so forth. We got rid of the type attributes on script and link. So that's great. So it's much easier to type in. We also got new elements. We got an element of a header, a section, and a footer. So instead of divs with ID or class, header, footer, and section, we can tell now what the browser or a syndication software or a search engine can do with these things. So instead of having to guess an ID or a class, we explicitly tell what the thing is. Sadly enough, neither browsers nor search engines do anything with that thing yet, but at least it's in there and we can actually do something with it. I had a few discussions with Google about the whole thing about that every section can have an H1 in it, and I wonder what the Google bot does with it if I got 400 sections in my page, because if I put 400 H1s right now in a document, I get blacklisted as a spam website. So that's something to fight a bit and worry about, but it's okay. So these are all the new things we have. We have sections, nav, article, H group, blah, blah, blah. All of these cool new HTML elements, that's great to have. What really excites me is that we have also new fields, new form fields. Forms were just input elements, radio buttons, check boxes, and that was about it. And now we got like things like email, which ties in on a mobile device into another keyboard. So the keyboard switches automatically to the one that makes it easier for me to enter things. I've got a URL, which is also going to the history of your URLs. Phone, which actually allows you to get to your address book. A color picker, which is now supported in Opera. And before that was only supported by BlackBerry. It was also the only thing the BlackBerry browser supported in HTML5, but they had a color picker. That's good. So if your friend is called brown or green, that was much easier to enter that form. We got a range, which is actually a slider control, a search box, which again goes to your history of your search, a number, which was called numeric up-down in .NET, which always was a great name, and a date picker. I finally have a calendar without having to write a calendar. Whoever came up with date and time hated programmers, because it was never fun to write these things and never fun to enter them, and now we have it in the browser, and they go down to time and date time as well. And we have autocompletes. So and every other UI interface, like has it been like Swing or Cocoa or whatever, I always have combo boxes where I can type things in or select from a pre-selected entry. And this is what we have in HTML5 forms now as well. We've got native video. Hooray! We finally have video that is accessible, it's keyboard accessible. You just put a video element in the page, you set controls, and you get all this stuff for free without having to actually use Flash and then make it accessible with an own script on the outside and so on and so forth. All this stuff is in the browser now, and that's great. And we have Canvas, which is a canvas. So without anything, you just put a canvas in the HTML, and yeah, it's a canvas. That's great. It's like an Etch-a-Sketch that you have in the page. You can plot on it and shake it. That's about what you can do with it. But we can do cool stuff with it when we do it. So what most people don't understand is that HTML5 is not only this semantic HTML stuff that I talked about. But if you look at the spec, the markup is a small part of it. A bigger part of it is actually JavaScript APIs that allow you to do cool shit with the browser that you couldn't do before. A bigger part even is stuff that explains to you how to write a parser or a browser to actually show this thing. And that's the first time. Before that, we had the HTML5, HTML4 standards, and browser vendors had to make a conscious decision to support them somehow. But in the new standard, we defined how a browser should do it. And that's really, really cool. And then, of course, there's a general WTF in any other standard as well. So new technology is actually what we're talking about. HTML5 is a selection of different technologies, and HTML is one of them. It's actually part of a larger world of like JavaScript stuff, codecs, canvas, hardware acceleration stuff, JavaScript type rate, WebGL. So we have a whole slew of new technology that came with HTML5 and these APIs. And it's very important that we understand that we limit ourselves if we just talk and harping on about the HTML part of it. So WebGL, for example, this is the Google Body browser that allows me in the browser to have 3D objects in there and interact with them. So this one is now like a Google map for the human body. And I normally show that live because that's how fast it actually is in the browser, but I always show root paths, and that's what I didn't want to do here. So I made a recording. But this is pretty sweet that I can do this in a browser nowadays, because before that I had to use a plugin for that and ask the people to download a plugin. And 3D stuff was always a pain to get right. It was Vermal in the past, and then QuickTime VR, and then Flash. But now we have it in the browser, built automatically. At Google I.O. this year, Roam was released, which is like three shades of black, or three dreams of black, it's called, which is an interactive music video. So you've got this in a browser. You can't see the little circle in the middle. You can control the whole video, much like a game. So it's a music video, and you have an editor in there that allows you to create new animals and put inside the music video. So it's fully interactive music video that actually runs inside the browser smoothly without having to use an extra plugin. It's actually amazing that they didn't use chrome.cr.ro.me, but they just did Roam. I should do marketing for Google, I know. This is Madden Animation, which is a demo for animatable.com, which is a tool that allows you to create CSS3 animations. So this is not Flash, this is not Silverlight, this is not Java, WebStart, or whatever we had in the past, but this is all HTML and CSS3 animations, and it still works as smoothly as we did before. Of course, we run the danger of reinventing the Flash intro in like semantic HTML, but it's just beautiful that you can do these things nowadays. And animatable.com is actually a tool that allows you to build these things with a timeline, much like the Flash interface did in the past. So I can see that replacing Flash ads really soon. Angry Birds was shipped over to browsers by Google at Google I.O. as well this year, well, by Rovio and Google, and now runs in the browser. And a year ago, everybody told me, like, oh, you know what? You cannot build something like Angry Birds in a browser. That's why we need native code for iPhone, for Symbian, for Android, and for those 10,000 different mobile phones that people use across the planet. But they shipped it over to HTML5 in the browser. This is about a year old. This is the Nissan Leaf website, which actually looks like an old Flash website, with new design. But if you look at it and you analyze it in Firebug and all these other developer tools, you realize that all of that here is actually SVG and Canvas. So I'm forwarding that a bit. Oh, there you go. So you can actually analyze all these things, and you find out that these are images and canvas elements and SVG elements. So all of that is done in proper open web technologies. And what is really impressive is the 360 view of that, which, let's fast forward that a bit. This was on a hotel wireless. This was not on a fast connection. Oh, yeah, well, I messed it up, didn't I? So let's try that again. So you have a 3D interior view of the car just by loading JPEGs in and pre-caching them instead of making a massive 3D object out of the car that nobody would ever maintain. And the same here, you've got a 3D view of that, and that is all JavaScript, CSS, and HTML5. Nike created that Nike Better World web page, which broke the idea of a web page has to have a toolbar, has to have these kind of things. So that one looks like an iPad app, but actually is a website, and this is all done in CSS3 and HTML5 as well. And that's pretty much amazing that nowadays we can do these things that in the past we had to find a contractor to do these things out there. So that can be maintained in a content management system. A Flash movie was always harder because you either had put all your content into XML and then maintained that, but it was always, you were always at the beck and call of somebody writing something for you. Wheelsofsteel.net is by Scott Schiller from Flickr, who obviously is into audio as he works for Flickr. And what he did a DJ mixing board with two decks in the browser. You can scratch, you can pitch, you can mix, you can load different MP3s from anywhere on the web to actually have a little scratching tool inside your browser. I didn't do a screencast, but it's absolutely amazing. Look at it. There's also a big blog post about it from him that actually allows you to read how he's done it with CSS3 transitions and so on and so forth. The slides are already on SlideShare, so all the links can be clicked there, and I will write a blog post afterwards as well and release them. So all of this actually means a shift in our perception of what a website is and what a website should do. It's not those blue links that click to another site and reload and be a form. It's a much more immersive, much more beautiful experience that we can do nowadays. And I want that. Why isn't the web looking like things in Iron Man? This could be my desktop in the morning. Why not? I could have a mobile controller that controls my laptop or my TV or all the things out there. This is all possible, but we don't think it's web. We just wait for somebody to build some closed technology to do it for us instead of just embracing the opportunities that we have and the possibilities. Why does my input device not change according to the task that I want to do? On a mobile phone with the new input elements in HTML5, the keyboard switches to the one that I need, like the number keyboard and the extra character keyboard and so on and so forth. In websites, we always have to find a way to do that properly. And 3D interfaces would be rather cool as well. My favorite example is always Minority Report. Remember that one when like you were standing there and doing this and like shifting shit around and, like, and everybody's, oh, that's the future. Do that all day long and your arms will be this. But it was Tom Cruise, so the interface is on this height. So we could sit down, actually. To get this kind of functionality in the past, we used plugins. We used Flash, we used Silverlight, we used Java. And this is the demos that we showed back then. The audio stuff in Flash and Silverlight Airlines to show how a website for airlines could look like. So we had plugins that did all this. What we forget about this is that these people did all the research that we now redo. So instead of just saying Flash is dead and Flash users were idiots, just talk to them and find out what they've done and reuse their thinking rather than reinventing and redoing the research that they already did for us. What I found, though, is that using plugins is like filling potholes on the super information highway. It's like we have to find things to put in, and then we have to ask every user to install it. We have to ask every user to maintain it. What I really want to do is just have a new thing on the web, a faster-paced environment that actually, from the get-go, in the browsers, has everything that I need, like the Autobahn, where you can really drive cars rather than teasing them like you do over here. So we have these cool technology, we have these iPads, we have these mobile phones that have 4 times the speed and 10 times the memory of the website, of the computer that I built HP.com on back then. And we don't use them yet, because on the web we think like, okay, we always have to think about the old computers first and then the new ones. This is folding at home, and folding at home is not me sitting at home and playing Iron Man, but folding at home actually is a crowdsourced analysis of protein folding, which is the cause for Alzheimer's and a few other diseases. So there's lots and lots of data and like gene data out there. And in Stanford, they give you this interface for your PS3 in this case, I think, and for Windows as well, that they keep sending you data sets. Your computer analyzes them while you're not using it and sends it back to Stanford. So we use the computers in the world to actually make this biggest supercomputer in the world that we have right now. We did this with SETI at home before, and now we actually do it to fight disease rather than finding aliens to tell us how to fight disease, which didn't work somehow. So it's actually all about the metal. It's all about the hardware. It's all about using what people have rather than just hoping they have the right thing and being scared of really using it. So HTML5 for me is using the capabilities of the technology we have instead of limiting ourselves to the lowest common denominator. And we've done that for so long, especially the standards, especially me. I was always like, have you thought about this old browser? Have you thought about users without JavaScript? Have you thought about users without CSS? Have you thought about users with CSS on and JavaScript off and the other way around and so on and so forth? And I think it's time we actually start focusing a bit on what can be done rather than what shouldn't be done. So it's an adaptation thing. It's like if something's broken, you find a way around and you do it differently. And the big thing that we had in the past was always separation of concerns, like make sure that everything works without the other. So CSS is off, JavaScript is off, this should not be there, this should not be working. And this still makes a lot of sense. Let's take a look what we had in the past. In the past, beginning with HTML, that was it. HTML and forms, we sent off forms. So HTML was the behavior, the presentation, and the structure. And then we started using, in DHTML days, one, that's like 1997, 1998 onwards, We started having JavaScript for behavior. So we had all these forms that only validated in JavaScript and then anything to the server that we wanted to. Great for getting Trojans out there and stuff. Presentation was done in HTML as well. Table layouts, nested font elements, much like the stuff that Google Web Toolkit still creates for you. And structure was also done in JavaScript at times. You had like these menu systems that were only in JavaScript and used lots of document writes to actually create a menu system for you. In the DHTML2 days, we then got started to get CSS. And CSS was raw awesome because instead of having font tags with a different color on every one of our elements, we now had one document that defined all the look and feel. But we still started to create look and feel with JavaScript because CSS was too slow for it and like drag and drop stuff and blah, blah, blah. So we still had JavaScript and the whole lot. And if we look at nowadays, we got the Zeltman in his Designing with Web Standards book created the gospel of proper web development, which means the structure goes in the HTML, everything you present goes into CSS, and every behavior, which is interaction and also changing and validation, all goes into JavaScript. That's what we said, this is what it would be like. And it still made sense. The only thing was that nowadays, if you look at what we release right now with HTML5 and how we push the envelope on everything, it more or less looks like this. So we just basically mix everything up again. And we forgot the standards that we had in the past. You find these demos that basically are a body element and the rest gets generated with JavaScript. And you're like, there's no way to debug what happens there. I can't send it to somebody else because they don't know what I've done. So right now, if you see something animating in a page, you look at the JavaScript, then you look at the CSS, then you realize which JavaScript gets loaded dynamically after the CSS has been applied. So we're hunting through the document and lots of files to see what's going on. And that is innovation. That just happens. But we have to rethink that a bit and see what we can do. The challenge that we have, though, is that we shouldn't be the grumpy-sounding old people in the corner that say, like, yeah, it's nice that you innovate, but you have to think about that, and you have to think about that, and you have to think about that. And the way we do it is we follow the spirit of the best practices and point out the benefits instead of harping on about them. Instead of saying, like, this should work without JavaScript, we should say, like, well, if it works without JavaScript, it works on my mobile device, on my old one, or a search engine can index it. Or it's much easier to maintain because I see in the HTML where it is rather than having to find your JavaScript file where you generate things and you minify it and I have to unminify it and debug it there. So we think about the spirit rather than about what it is. And to me, web development was always pick and mix. It was never a one technology rules them all. And that, sadly enough, every blog post out there is fanboys of jQuery, JavaScript, or CSS and try to do everything in one of these technologies rather than seeing that it can be a mix of several technologies, all of which have one task to do and proper Luna. There are a few causes in HTML5 to fight for, and that's what I'm doing. And it's sometimes people say, okay, you stop innovation with that, but I don't care because we really have to think about the open web and we really have to think about what we're doing with the web if we want to maintain it in the future. This is about evolution. This is not about making it the same mistakes we did in 1997 when we thought Internet Explorer 6 was the best browser out there. We have to actually start thinking about what we do in the future. The first thing is I want better HTML5 form support. The form elements I showed you earlier, Opera is the only browser that does it that supports them all. All the other browsers, including the one that I work for, don't have full support for these kind of things. So the WooFoo guys did some really good research into what is supported in which browser. And I do think that HTML forms, in HTML5 forms, and they're properly supported, will make so much better websites because it has client-side validation in it, for example. You don't have to write a validator for every form that you do. You have to still validate it on the server, because otherwise I will be the first one to try to inject code into your server. But you don't have to write a JavaScript that you don't understand and make a bad validator for your postcode or expect American zip code when my N42XX in England doesn't work. So all these things can be natively done if browser supported it. And I'm not going to point fingers here, but, well, anyways. Furthermore, learn JavaScript. There is no way that JavaScript will be gone. JavaScript is the language that we all have to understand, and it's not jQuery, it's JavaScript. There's a few things that we have to understand about it, and as you said, like, my dog can't be trained 5 years now teaching JavaScript, he still hasn't grasped the basics. But it's a very cool language. It's so flexible. It's so wonderful. But you can do server-side and client-side with JavaScript nowadays. It's not hard to understand. It's just you have to take that step and do it. The web needs to be operating system independent as well. There are a few people out there that tell you you only get HTML5 if you upgrade your operating system. And that, to me, is unfair. I don't have to change my computer to use the web. That's not the idea of the web. If it's actually tied to an operating system upgrade, that's not where I want to go, and this is what we should be fighting against. And this also ties in with the, like, okay, sorry, you don't have an iPad, you can't see my website. Well, then don't offer it to anybody else, then make it an iPad app instead. It's just annoying that people expect you to have coolest, newest hardware and operating systems when they put things on the web. The other thing is to keep it open. Of course, innovation happens faster when you're in a closed environment. When you control the hardware and the software, it's easier to build something amazingly cool than when both of those are open and can be messed with. I mean, just look at the iPad compared to Android tablets or Android phones. I mean, every Android provider, HTC, Ericsson, all the hardware providers came up with their own interface that is Android. So there's no consistent Android look and feel, which is a bad thing for a lot of designers and for people out there. And with Apple, there's a consistent look and feel, but you also can't break that look and feel. If you want to do something else with it, good luck getting it into the App Store. So I'd rather have something open that's beautiful, and that's a challenge. So many designers that I know say, like, oh, I support iOS because it's beautiful. And Android looks like shit. I'm not going to do anything for that. You're like, well, your challenge should be to make Android beautiful, not to just support the thing that is already beautiful. Where's the challenge in that for you as a designer? It's just painful. But yeah, it's hard to do that and to convey that to people. Using the source is very, very important. And I think most of us, I can safely say, learned by looking at other people's source code and messing around in it and trying to understand what they've done. So it's a classic engineering thing. We take something, we simulate it, then we break it, then we learn from that, rather than just reading the documentation and then starting developing. That's not how we work. So if the source code of your great HTML5 product is not beautiful, beautiful source code, then you have done wrong in my book. Source code is poetry. It's as much interface as it is your beautiful graphical interface. Your source code interface is for the next developer that has to take over from you. If I have to be you understand your code. If I have to guess what you've been doing, I don't do that as an engineer. I just restart from scratch, and we do that over and over and over again because we don't pay attention to the quality and the beauty of our source code. So an extra round of refactoring what we've done to make it more readable, to make it more understandable, is never wasted time. And if your boss tells you that, then tell him, like, sorry, but if I'm gone, you want somebody else to take over from me, and I make that for that person right now. My job is to make the guy that comes after me make his life easier, rather than just being my own awesome coder in the corner that does something, and when I'm bored, I'm leaving, I leave this massive, unusable pile of code behind. Browser independence. Of course, HTML5 is about pushing the envelope and every browser vendor doing something different right now. But what we should be praising is the things that then get implemented across the browsers. And most browsers are open source, so we can help each other. Chrome helps Firefox. Firefox helps Safari, Chromium, and so on and so forth. Opera is very good in listening to other people as well. And Internet Explorer is starting to do these kind of things as well. I don't want a website right now to tell me that you need the newest WebKit or Safari to see the website. This is exactly the same mistake we did with Best Viewed in Internet Explorer 5 and Best Viewed in Internet Explorer 6. But nowadays we call it innovation. You know, I don't care if it only works on your browser. There's progressive enhancement to only show it for that browser and still show something useful for the other browsers. And that is what we should be actually striving for rather than just being fanboys of this or that browser. I get a lot of demos sent in that only works in Firefox, and they're like, ooh, cool, look at that, put it on the Mozilla blog. And I'm like, well, if you change these 5 lines, it works in Chrome as well and in other browsers as well, so let's do that first before we release it. Because I don't want to frustrate people. I don't want to put things on the web, then when they go, they break. You see a lot of people that write their slides right now in HTML5 and use all kind of like experimental stuff in the latest nightly build that only works on their computer. And then they put the slides online, and the first impression that you get from HTML5 slides is that they don't work. this is not the idea that we do as evangelists. It's like we should show things that work and work better when the browser is better. Accessibility, of course, is another big thing. And nobody is covering that much. There's HTML5accessibility.com. There's the accessibility chops of the Paciello group. There's a few blog posts out there, but like a lot of the things we do right now, we do wrongly because we can. And it just, it blew my mind when I was at Google I.O. and the accessibility talk, which again was five people in the room rather than 400, when it should be, showed us talked about semantic HTML, that we should use the right HTML elements for the right job, and then it showed us how to turn a link into a button and make that button accessible to screen readers, to keyboard users, and to everything in 45 minutes. So with lots of JavaScript and CSS and rounded corners and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you just talked about semantic HTML. Why don't you use a button element for a button? But instead of doing that, we just rather explain how to make something that is a link work like a button. And that's the kind of problem that we have right now. Accessibility is rather easy if we just use the things for what they are. But a lot of times we don't use the right things because there's rendering issues in browsers and so on and so forth. So don't fall for that problem of making something accessible that isn't, because normally there are things in there that are already. So things to applaud are sane progressive enhancement. This is one thing that has been shown several times in terms of what CSS3 animations can do. It's Ben the Bodyguard, and this is a website. This is when I scroll it in my browser, this is what it looks like. So my computer was rather choppy at the time, so it's not as smooth as it normally is. So this guy walks down the street and explains everything to you, what the application is. You got Dominus with a stretched guy on the bed that every website should have, I guess. And it's just beautiful. It's like interactive. It's a storytelling of what the application does until you reach the end of the screen, where then there's a form where you can send in your email to say, I want to have that app when it comes out. And this is beautifully done. This is what CSS3 animation is about. But then you look at the source code of the thing, and you get lots of like JavaScript that randomly doesn't have anything to do with what's going on there. But the code itself, lots of inline code, empty divs with IDs on them. So don't tell me you're using semantic HTML and you're using open technology. This is a Flash intro. This is not better than a Flash intro right now, because the HTML under it doesn't do anything. Why isn't that text that person tells while it's scrolling not in the page for a search engine to index or for me to search for and so on and so forth? On the other hand, the animation thing that we've done before, if you look at that in a browser that doesn't have CSS animation, you get this. You get a list with the explanation what the animation does at the moment and a preview little icon what it would look like in a browser that supports animation. That is the way to do it. That's extra work. It's not, actually. If you do that up front and you do your storytelling that way, writing your animation becomes much, much easier afterwards, because you already thought about the storyline and all these kind of things. So you just reuse what you have to do anyways rather than just falling back to empty divs. So what about old infrastructure? That's always the big thing, isn't it? We've got new technology, we can use it, and what about old ones? And it boils down to old browsers, really. And especially, in this case, Internet Explorer 6. Which is not going away, no matter what people tell me, because universities, big corporations, those people actually build their software, and every 5 years they have a software review cycle for an ISO 9000 certification or some other crap that shouldn't be around anymore. And we got stuck with that. Windows XP only gets Internet Explorer 8. You cannot upgrade to Internet Explorer 9 or 10 on XP. You just go to Windows Update and it tells you, Instead of telling you, like, sorry, we don't like you anymore. XP should die. We're Microsoft. We want to sell our new Windows. So why don't you just go to Opera, to Firefox, or to Chrome and download a browser that supports your old operating system? Because we got your money the first time around. We don't want you anymore. Which is sad. It's like, I'm sorry, it's like either you do it or you don't. Either you play in HTML5 or you give people old browsers. What you do is you start with a clean slate. HTML5 boilerplate has a lot of research into it, and it shows you, actually allows you to start with HTML and style it in Internet Explorer and all the things that you have to do. It's really simple to use. You start from scratch with that, and you can write your HTML5 page, and you got support for the old browsers already in there. Modernizer is a JavaScript that actually analyzes the capabilities of the browser that you have at the moment and gives you then classes on the HTML element of your document that you can test against. You can say, like, if HTML class name contains WebGL, I know that this browser can do WebGL, rather than having to test it every single time by myself. So instead of doing a test from all of my scripts, I keep it out of Modernizer commit because we can upgrade Modernizer all the time as well, and HTML5 boilerplate contains it. And this is great. This is exactly what I want. I just want to have a test that runs it before I apply it. This is progressive enhancement in the making. There's, of course, a danger. When you go overboard with progressive enhancement and you follow basically standards down a cliff, then you start supporting old technology, and this is called polyfills. Polyfills is the idea that, for example, for a multi-file upload, you've got a file API in HTML5, and for Internet Explorer, you use a Flash file instead. And that's great, because you give the technology to every user out there. But what most people forget about polyfills is that you actually support means that you test with it. If you say, I put something in there to make it work for Internet Explorer, then you also said, I test for Internet Explorer so it works smoothly. Because just making it work is not enough. If the thing, if an animation is done with like all kind of dirty technologies from the past, and it goes like in like 5 frames per second on Internet Explorer, that's not useful, that's actually annoying. So you have to test if you support. And to me, I shouldn't waste testing time on the undead. Our time with testing stuff should not be 80% in an Explorer 6, where I have to start a virtual machine to actually see it on my computer. It should be testing for the new browsers and the new technologies. So I'm not a big fan of polyfills because you're just giving an offer to people from the past without saying, like, you test for it, and you shouldn't do that. So, okay, on a better note, what is cool out there? What are the things that are coming up that you can use right now and most people don't do yet? File APIs. This is C64 yourself, which allows you to take an image from your desktop. So this is what a desktop looks like on a Mac. It's just like on Windows, just beautiful. And you drag it into the browser. The browser takes your image, analyzes it in this old C64 interface, and converts it to this using Canvas and JavaScript only. There's no server involved in that whole thing so far. I uploaded it by dragging it into the browser, and in the browser it converted it, and now I can save it from the browser as well. So the browser is my conversion tool. You can unzip and zip files in the browser nowadays without having to go through a server. All of this is possible with those file APIs. Media queries allow you to build interfaces that actually resize according to what is available on your device. Most people show it by resizing a browser. That's not really a use case that we have a lot, and sometimes it's really annoying, actually, because I want to focus on something rather than having the whole thing resized. But this one now, on a mobile phone, it would have that interface, and on a bigger screen, it would have the other interface, and that is all done in CSS, and that's beautiful as well. HTML5 video in Canvas allows us to interact with video. This was a demo that somebody had written a long time ago, and somebody just put the open source into his website now, that you see the music video of his song, and you have to put it together as a puzzle. And if you manage to solve the puzzle in the time that the song is running, you can download the MP3 for free. And that's a really cool interface in terms of marketing that's just based on an HTML5 demo out there. And this is the stuff I want to see. History push state, I'm not going to go much into that. It basically means that you can change the URL of a document while you're interacting with it without reloading the page. The pain was always like we used Ajax to load content. The URL did not change. So bookmarking was broken, back buttons were broken, and back buttons are important. I know so many users that actually see a light box in the page, and to get rid of the light box, instead of clicking on that X or knowing that you press the escape button, they actually go back one page in the browser. So with history push state, you can make sure that they still get the same interface and the URL still works and reloads to where they're going. So it's a wonderful little tool to make it more secure. SVG is an old technology in W3C terms. This one is D3.js, which is a JavaScript library that you can put in the page. And all of these cool visualizations are actually data tables in the page. HTML tables that you can control with your content management system or whatever you want, and it creates these cool graphs for you without having to know anything about it. Highcharts.js and also the Centchart charts do just the same thing in interactive ways, so you have rollovers, and you got animated charts, and all these things that we sold Flash with 5 years ago are now possible in HTML in the page with JavaScript. Local storage is the death of cookies, and cookies suck. Because cookies were never a useful thing, because every HTTP request sends every cookie that you send, so every image will come with an extra 4K for that, an extra 4K for that. The syntax was always completely confusing. Local storage allows you 5 megabytes per domain as a key value store in the browser. That's much better to store local information than a cookie, especially in Europe, where now you have to ask user for every cookie that you set. Offline, how many times are you offline? Like, I'm over here, my data plan would be 1 meg, £7.50. No, I'm not going to go online. But with offline applications, I can actually write a manifest file for my HTML page that tells me what should be stored on my computer so I can still write things on the plane, and when I get online again, it syncs it for me. Awesome. A lot of problems with testing if you're online or offline, but we're working on that. CSS3, we said before, you got transform, transitions, you got gradients, you got rounded corners, you got all those things that you, in the past you had to start your Photoshop for, you've got now built into the browser without any extra information. Geolocation. Why do I have to type in every time where I am? I want to have a button that says, like, find me and pre-fill the zip code, pre-fill the city, pre-fill the street, so I don't have to type these things in. Possible with 2 lines of JavaScript, even in Firefox 3. And that's what most people forget, that these things are rather old at times. We can actually, in JavaScript, now access the orientation of hardware. So this one is a CSS example that has a 3D parallax on mobile phones, and these are crap phones. And you actually can read compass and these kind of things in there, so you can actually interact with that. And that's pretty cool for accessibility as well. I mean, I always found that, like, touch interfaces, or when you can turn something around, like, my dad and mom would never play with a computer game, but it was, like, all arrows and buttons. But with the Wii, they're like, oh, I play tennis like this? Awesome. So that we can do in JavaScript now as well. Vidly is a great, great tool to convert videos into formats of HTML5. As companies are bastards and they all want to have their own video codec, you have to create 14 different video formats to support every mobile phone and every device and everything out there with HTML5 video. With Vidly, you get one URL where you upload a video and it converts it into all these formats that you need for browsers, for mobile, and for consoles. So the browsers, these are the browsers they support, in which format and which size. For consoles as well, and for mobile phones as well. And they even support, like, old Sony Ericsson, Samsung, Nokia, BlackBerry, and they even create an FLV file for Internet Explorer 6. And this is automatically done for you. The URL that you have will redirect you to the video that you need. So this is encoding.com in San Francisco. Really, really cool service to make HTML5 video work. Dive into HTML5. Org is a book where you can learn everything into HTML5. It's written for designers and developers. It's not that hard to understand. HTML5 Doctor is a blog that has snippets of HTML5 almost every day where you can learn things from. PhoneGap.com is much like Accelerator, an opportunity to turn HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript things into native code for mobile phones and for iPad devices. And we have these dev derbies running every month right now where you can win t-shirts and bags and Android devices where you can actually show off your technology. CSS animations was last month, HTML5 video is now, touch events will be in August, so there's lots of demos for you to play with. All of them are available as source code, so you can actually look at them as well. And they're open source, that's because that's what you have to do if you want to win stuff from Mozilla. So, in retrospect, it's been a long time since we did, like, glue links, the sending from pages to pages, and only had HTML and CGI on the server to do things. And I think it's time that we start embracing these kind of things rather than staying in the past and saying, like, you can't use that right now because there's old browsers out there. Support old browsers by giving them content that makes sense. Don't support old browsers by jumping through hoops and actually simulating new technology with old technology, because that is a vicious circle. We cannot get out of that one anytime soon. So web development has been a long and arduous journey, and I think it's actually time that we have some fun. So thank you very much.